Start this panel with a slight delay. Sorry about that. So welcome to the panel, Net Labels, Niche Long Tail or Blueprint, question mark. We're going to do four quick presentations today, try to keep this short, and apologies that we are wearing sunglasses up here, but these lights are crazy. We're going to start off with Moritz Sauer, who is already standing here. Let me introduce him briefly. Moritz is a freelance journalist, web designer, book author, and music lover. He's doing a website called flow.net, that is a German language weblog/online magazine dealing with net labels and online music distribution, design, net culture, things like that. He also published a book in Germany at the German O'Reilly this year called Websites für Musiker, DJs, and Net Labels, which would translate to websites for musicians, DJs, and net labels, I guess. And he's going to tell us a little bit about the net label phenomenon in general. And with that, just give him a hand.
So, hello, my name is Moritz Sauer. Some people call me just Mo. As an introduction, I would read a little statement I found on a very nice musician's website. This girl is called Bobby Baby. She's coming from Scandinavia, and she says, "People have asked me why she's sharing the music for free on the internet. The answer is simply that Bobby Baby wants as many people as possible to get to know her, and internet gives her that opportunity. We're all winners." This is why a lot of net label starts. They just want to publish music. They want to give it for free. They don't have lots of money. And it's all started as a very root culture thing. And now I will talk a little bit what's the state of now. Mainly, if we talk about free software, in the music business, for musicians, they use mainly closed software because of the big programs. There are no available software right now. And just they use sometimes free plugins or open source plugins, but mainly they use programs like this one. It's Ableton Live, or they use Reason, and then they dump the music on one file as a WAV or as an MP3. And then they try to publish it on their websites. What's great about a lot of net label websites, they're better than normal label websites, even better than major websites, because they use they are addicted to the internet, and they use very new technologies. Of course, RSS is not that new, but even for musicians, RSS is very new. So, for example, they use RSS to syndicate news, when is a new release coming up, when do we do concerts, and so on. This is, for example, Subsource, a very experimental net label. Of course, a lot of net labels choose also podcasts to publish their music. The problem with podcasts is that you lose the connection to the listeners, because you just download the music and listen to it on iPod, and sometimes you don't know what's music, whose music is it I'm listening to. So podcast is a quite difficult thing, but to give just a little fix to the people that they come to get the whole album is quite interesting. Of course, they use flash streaming and so on and so on. They're just a very minority of net labels who try to make a connection to the real world. I divide net labels into two main groups. The one is some sort of music personal publishing, like weblogging thing. They just publish the music and, oh, it's nice, and they don't look after the quality. They do some techno tracks and don't think about it, just push it up into the internet. And on the other hand, there are some really good labels. They do really label work. They write newsletters to radio stations. We have something new. Can you play it? And so on. So they try to make a connection to radio, TV, and print magazines. One of them is, for example, Epsilon Lab. They're coming from Canada. Another one is sitting. The head is sitting here on his chair. He will talk later. And another label is, for example, Pentagonix. They're coming from Berlin. They make parties here. So they make a local connection with a virtual scene and the local scene right in the cities. Also, during the last years, a lot of net labels thought, oh, yeah, it's nice to push out music, to give it free, but how can I support the artist? This is quite difficult because to support someone, to throw a good party, you need money. And some start also now doing CDs or merchandise thing. One is Jatari. That's my favorite one. They do dub reggae music with vocals, very interesting. And also for the German listeners, very nice with German Dadaistic lyrics. And they have, for example, a shop system on their own site. If you want to make music by selling MP3s, CDs, and vinyls, it's always real labels have to connect with the big ones. For example, this one is Beatport. They focus their MP3 selling on mainly electronic music from techno, trance, drum, bass, whatever. Or you go to Fine Tunes. Fine Tunes is in Germany. They sit in Hamburg. And you try to make a connection with them, but it's quite difficult. Because if you're small, they put you in the queue and sometimes you die there. What is good about net label thing? It's awareness economy. Because you use the internet to give music for free. And in return, you get attention. If you make good music, you get good attention and lots of attention. And the good thing about it, you can share the music. If I find something new, I say on my website, flow.net, listen there, listen there. You're not connected to DRM, so if I download music from the net label scene, my hard disk crashes. I just download it again. With iTunes, that's a little bit more complicated than other systems, which use digital rights management. I just want to read this statement. He's one of the first people who published music on a net label. He's called Primer. Today he works for another firm on another project, but Tokyo Dawn is still one of the best. He says, giving music away for free is awareness economy. You can't earn money by just publishing just 1,000 vinyl copies. We choose to give our music to public for free to reach more listeners and to get a better promotion for our musicians. Because if you have if you look on the selling by vinyl, techno vinyl, drum bass, with 1,000 copies, you don't earn money. So, why are net labels a good choice? They're a good choice because when self-distribution is the only way, because everybody denies you and thinks, oh, no, that's not good. So you choose to publish it on a net label or make your own one. It's very good because you can form fan communities. You can talk with the people. You get responses by your websites, by using maybe a blog, and then the people can post comments and so on. You build a solid platform for cooperation between different artists. They send their music files and can make remixes and so on. Also, net labels are a good choice to sell music in digital formats for self-determination, and to share obscure and difficult music, because this is a great advantage. You can go globally, and maybe your experimental music is so weird that just there are 100 people on the planet which would love it, so the internet gives you the chance. A working net label needs an existence besides the web, as I told you, on local platforms to do clubbing and so on, a local fan base, corporations with other musicians and labels. Don't stay in the internet if you want to do a good net label. Make corporations, talk to others, and make parties together and do the sharing. You have to go out, do promotion, not in the internet, also TV and so on. And the best thing today, in my opinion, or the last way for a musician to earn good money is doing concerts, because I think CD, vinyl, and even digital formats, you won't earn money very much with those kind of sellings, because people can share it if it's digital. And who buys a CD today? Maybe my mom, because she doesn't know how to use an iPod or something like that. And I think vinyl and CDs are a dying format. And a working net label needs lots of work and addiction. I say thank you. And now the next one is coming up. These are just two websites. The one is my magazine. It's obviously it's in German. The other one is netlabels.org. It's a wiki or wiki. And there you can find some net labels. They're sorted. The net labels can publish what releases they have. They can write something about themselves and some sort of self-organization to get new people into the scene. Thanks.
Next up, we have Sebastian Redens, who is the founder and head of Thinner, a net label, and also Autoplate, which is a sister net label. He's based in Regensburg, Mannheim, sorry. Probably better to introduce him himself. Just to briefly say that again, Thinner is one of the most prolific net labels out there. It's out there for a couple of years already, has millions of downloads and artists from all over the world. And without talking too much more.
Good day, everybody. My name is Sebastian Redens, and I'm from Mannheim, as Janko said. Yes, I'm running with friends a net label called Thinner. It's one of the older net labels. It exists since 5 years in the current form, which is distributing MP3s. Thinner has been founded originally in 1997 by a Swedish guy, Thomas Hjaldemark, who is not in the team anymore. And unfortunately, I don't have such a fancy presentation like Moritz does. I will just start with some sentences regarding how Thinner evolve. What was the motivation behind? What is the motivation behind to keep that label running? And afterwards, I will say or talk about current topics that are of interest for us in developing Thinner into a net label that has an outlook of a profit-oriented work. Okay, so as I said in the beginning, Thinner is originally being found in the late 90s. It was by that times when MP3 as a format didn't exist. It distributed module files. These are sort of proto music files which stored samples. And by that time... Sorry if I'm too loud. By that time, the music files were circulating in the internet as on bulletin boxes, and these files went to my email inbox for some reason, and I got interested in all this method. As Moritz said, Tokyo Dawn was one of these net labels who were one of the earliest and distributing these files by themselves. This got the interest of mine. So I got in touch with Thomas about this system, and he told me, or he explained, what is the motivation behind, which is sharing music of his friends for free in the internet. And so I decided in 2K1 to join this group, and by that time they were distributing MP3 files already and not anymore these module files. And we decided when I joined that we are going to restructure Thinner, because by that time it was completely a nerd thing, which, like, because of its structures, not open to people who were enjoying MP3s. So we said we are going to use MP3 files, and we are going to start to make this net label attractive for people who are not part of this computer scene where it originally evolved from. And so we said, okay, from where can we get artists to release on this net label and who are interested in having their music distributed for free? So by that time, the platform was mp3.com, and we just went there and we're looking for artists who did music we like and thought would be suitable to have shared. And we contacted them, and they were very open for this because of some obvious advantages a net label has in opposition to a platform like mp3.com, which is mainly the target groups. If you compare on a platform like mp3.com or Bsonic, you find any genres of music, and it's not like a selected tunes, or there's no system behind. It's like anybody can upload, and so you never know if there is a good quality or not. So what we do is like pre-selecting music and uploading it to our website, and so the early success of this method, a net label, is based on this, so that people know if they go to the net label and can download MP3 files, they get a certain quality selection. So that's what we did. And other things were like introducing structure was like using file names, so you can actually catalogize these files. You have proper ID3 tags, so you know what you're playing. And you have a regular release structure with multiple tracks instead of single tracks or something. So it gives, in a total, a shaped state. So 2K3, after we did 30 releases and received good feedback, we did our first tour. We are based from Germany originally, and we did a tour in Canada, and which it was not really a tour, say it was like 6 gigs, like in 12 days, a little tour. And to our surprise, when we went there, you know, you've got to imagine, we are not present in any record store. You can't buy us. We are only exist in the internet. And to our surprise, these parties we did, we had no expectations. They were very well crowded, and this showed us that the people are interested in this kind of music, or like in this kind of distribution of music, to get that these people are getting information about their music in online and not exclusively over radio or magazines. So so it was like a virtual label is going to a city and playing, and the people take it. So when we were there in Canada, we met many people who are interested in this whole topic, and in the end, the net label Epsilon Lab, which Moritz has showed 10 minutes ago, this net label was founded based on our cooperation that exists from there, because before Epsilon Lab was only a CD selling label. So in 2K4, when we had our 50th release, we did another tour again in Canada, but also we were playing also in Detroit, and this was again showed that there is definitely a big potential for net labels to go to make concerts, to go on tour, to present themselves. If there is a good lineup, then the people will take it, they will accept it, and again the tour was well crowded. So by this time, we finally realized, so to say, that this can be definitely a serious platform to promote your music. Then by that time, too, we decided to do Flash artwork, to use the graphic format Flash for our artwork, because we wanted, we said, okay, as we are a virtual label, so to say, and have our releases online, why not use the structures the internet offers? And Flash is one of these formats, which is a good example for digital visualization. So we use this technique to have animated artwork. So it's partly self-modulated. So if you have the artwork and maybe you fade with your mouse over it, then there are some random intergears that make some funny graphics or stuff. So we have introduced this technique and use it since then. So in 2K5, last year, there were personal fluctuations, so to say, as we are one of the more constant net labs. We have a big team of 10 people working with us, and there were some changes in the key positions. And last year was when I met my partner, with whom I have established Thinner as a company meanwhile. And my partner is working for Cocoon in Frankfurt, in Cocoon Club. That's a big record label and a big club. And he's like the art director for the for Thinner in terms of visualization and for our new projects which are coming up. And we now are in the process of developing a new version of Thinner, so to say, which shall, besides having a completely new website, have a new direction, a new business direction, because, you know, as you have heard before, these music files are distributed for free, so there is no compensation for the artists, and it's a problem to keep the motivation up if you invest a lot of work in your project all the time, and the musicians too, and they get no financial compensation. So the question is now, which structures and which key elements can be developed and introduced in a net label, and that will be understood and taken by the crowd, so by the people, by the fans. So we are making our head, or we are thinking of these of methods and structures since a long time, and we are coming to the point when we make decisions now, and if our decisions will be successful, like if they are accepted and if we can actually work profit oriented, time will tell. And my goal is to develop some sort of a scheme with basic business fields and basic methods how net labels are able to generate profit. And
maybe, sorry to fall into your roadmap, but the time is going ahead. Maybe we can go a little bit more into the details in the discussion, and you can tell us more about your ideas.
I was right now done anyway.
Okay, sorry. Then that was very rude of me. Okay. I'm very sorry. Okay, next up. Next up, we have John Buckman, who is the CEO of Magnatune.com, which is a little bit of a different net label because it is not, unlike as the before present net labels, it started as a commercial enterprise, but at the same time, it works with Creative Commons licenses and has an open access idea behind it. John is originally from Berkeley. He's living in London half of the year. He's also traveling around in Europe right now to do a couple of presentations. And these presentations do involve Magnatune as well as a new project that he just started a couple of weeks ago, I guess. And since we have him here right now, we thought maybe he tells us a few words about bookmerch.com, which is his new book swapping website. And then we will hear more about Magnatune. And so go ahead.
Okay, can you hear me okay? Okay, so I'm here to talk about Magnatune, which is my internet record label. However, I have this project called Bookmooch that started 3 weeks ago that is an open culture project, and I'm just going to say a few things about it and then talk about Magnatune. So you can see from the graphic, it's about books and loving books. This is the site in German. It's available in 6 languages. What Bookmooch is, it's a very simple idea. It's if I have a book that I no longer want, and you want it, you can ask me to send it to you. I then get 1 point, and I can ask someone else in the network to send it to me. This is very simple. It's just peer-to-peer books. And it's non-commercial, completely free. And it's only 3 weeks old and already has 70,000 books in it. It's done quite well. I'm doing a quick search here. It says multi-language. You can see here in Deutschland, I did a search for books that would likely be in German, and some things came up. Here's, if you're having trouble sleeping, this is a book that will probably work. You can find out all about the party system of your government, and no more problems sleeping. Orson Scott Card is a very popular science fiction writer, and you can see these are all books that are currently available for free. This is what a book page looks like. It shows you that there are two copies available from two people, some information. You can browse a number of ways. I'm going fairly quickly because this is the NetLabel talk after all. Part of being open is having open APIs, open feeds, and this other site called Library Thing, which is also very good, links into BookMooch. And you can see there's a swap this book. It tells you where you can get that book from a number of different sites. When you go to click on the Mooch link, you can go and ask that person, and this guy who's playing guitar will send you his copy of the book. Here's a list of all the books that you have to send. Something that's quite interesting is instead of using Amazon, you know, why always go to Commerce? Why not instead, when you find a book on the internet you like, add it to a wish list and see if you can get it for free? That's what this wish list is, and as soon as a book is available for free through the system, it's sent to you. And no need to buy books. Nice longer life. Here, for example, is something I've done. There's something called the Mooch Bar, which is a browser plugin, so that when you're on Amazon, and for example, you see this book on Amazon and you like it, in the top left there, there's a button that says Mooch. If you click that, and this is not a fabricated example. I just picked the first book I could think of. And it turns out it is actually available here, and I can click on it, and I don't have to buy it. So instead of at Amazon, you get it for free. I clicked on the African book list that was on that page, and this is the Amazon page for that. I again hit Mooch, and it turns out some 9 books are available for free, and you can also put them on your wish list. And there you go. You can also browse by country and various locations. This is my hometown. Southeast London, so it's broken down so you can trade books person to person. You can also, if you have more points than you like, give your points to charities, and I work with some children's hospitals and other charities for past that. This is the charitable points, and this is what our statistics look like, so they're very, very positive. These are actually a week old, and since that week, the delta, the growth rate, has doubled. That's the presentation on BookMooch. Thank you. Do I still have sound? Good. This is my rock star photo, back when I had more hair. So what Magnatune is a next generation record label. You can see the slogan, perhaps, here. It says, "We are not evil." And the reason it says that is because if you are at a dinner party and someone says, "So what do you do, sir?" And I say, "I'm from a record label," they usually want to wash their hand after shaking my hand, because it's not a good business. It's a dirty business, and it's corrupt and fairly evil. The goal was to see, is it possible to not release CDs and still build a viable record label business? I could, of course, do CDs, but by doing CDs, I would be in distribution and this hell that doesn't make money anyway. Instead, be internet-focused, see what happens. So I combine business to consumer, selling to consumers, as well as business to business. I sell downloads and CDs, as well as licensing music for commercial use. So the main benefits for a consumer, at Magnatune you'll find 500 full albums. You can listen to them in their entirety, as MP3 streams, as genre mixes, shoutcast, even as downloads, full preview. Something that's very unusual is if you choose to buy it, we ask, how much do you want to pay for this album? And we ask them to pay between $5 and $18, with a suggested price of $8. And these are translated to pounds and euros if you come from different places. What's interesting is, on average, people pay about $8.50 for a download. And when they buy a CD, they pay about $9.50 for the music on a CD, plus a $5 fee for the CD. We also never use any DRM, so when you purchase it, you automatically get a whole variety of formats, everything from MP3 and VBR, in AUG, FLAC, even AAC files, without DRM. We get about 400 submissions every month. We've gotten a fair amount of press, everything from USA Today to Newsweek. In fact, Newsweek listed us in their top 20 music sites on the internet, which was quite flattering. So we get a lot of press and a lot of CDs. From the 400 CDs we get every month, we choose about 5 to 10, which are the ones that we really like. And it's not just electronica. In fact, that's one of 6 genres. Our strongest genre is actually classical music, with 45% of sales. But things like death metal or electronic body music or singer-songwriter, these all do quite well. We focus on genres that you cannot find in stores, so you would go on the internet. Also, because it's a manageable size, it's not gigantic like iTunes, it's a lot easier to navigate. So you can listen in various ways here. Fair price, no registration. Now, from an open standpoint, if you go to the site, you'll see it says the Open Music Record Label. All our music is Creative Commons by NCSA licensed. If you go to the Creative Commons website and you click on their music link on the homepage, you'll see where they're featured, highest rated link. And the reason for that is we're trying to find a boundary between open and commercial, where we can finance commercial through open and free use. What the Creative Commons license lets us do is license music commercially, and this is by far the strongest part of our business. If you go to Magnatune and there's a song that you'd like to use in your commercial project, you click license and there are 14 scenarios you can choose, everything from music for your telephone to music for your television advertisements. This is extremely successful. If you type in music license on Google, you will see that Magnatune is the number one hit. Before Sony, before ASCAP, before any other record label on the planet. And in fact, we license more music online than anyone else, even though we're open source. Today, we do about 30 to 50 films a month licensing our music, and the Creative Commons aspect is a strong part of that, because people can use the music for free in their film while they're in development, while they're showing their film non-commercially, say to an audience that doesn't pay. And if they get distribution, they can license it at a very low cost, and we do not exert any control over their product. This continuum of non-commercial to commercial with no blocks in the middle, you know what the price will be, you don't have to ask us for permission, we don't need to see the content, enables a large amount of reuse. We also release, whenever possible, tracks in multi-track format, and if you go to ccmixter.org, which is created by a musician of Magnatune, Victor Stone, CC Mixter is an excellent, excellent remix site where all the sources are Creative Commons, and you can post it and download, and then we find the best ones, and we try and commercialize them and release albums for sale, which then goes back and pays for the remix. So quality product there. Generally, people really hate the music industry, and they don't want to pay. They would rather use peer-to-peer in order to just fight back. And that's what we're trying to do with We Are Not Evil, is try truly to embrace an open nature, at the same time, make money. And to give you an idea, we have been in existence for 3.5 years, and we're currently 4 employees, and we pay payroll completely from our profits. And 50% of every dollar, every euro that comes in, goes to our musicians. So it appears to be working. It appears to be a possible model for commercializing open source. Thank you.
So the last presentation for this panel comes from Olivier Schulbaum. He's from Platonic.net and the Bern Station. He's a Berlin and Barcelona-based filmmaker and net artist. He's going to tell us a little bit more about what the Bern Station is about, but he's also involved in other projects. If you go to platonic.net, you're going to find Bern FM, you're going to find a couple of different projects that his group is working on, which is concentrating on community building tools, on social software, and on network strategies for public spaces. And you can tell that I read the last sentence because I never could have made this up right now. Anyway, we're going to hear from him as soon as he has plugged in his notebook. And if you're ready to go,
might have to switch there.
While he's still working on it, we can tell you that the burn station is actually going to be available on the Wizards of Oz conference space. It's going to be built up later today, I think, and you can check it out outside or in the space next door, basically. And it's going to be available throughout Saturday, as far as I know. And what else can we tell you while we wait for the technology?
I'll be ready soon. Anyway, maybe I can start. Do you hear me? Okay. It's kind of a funny thing to present a project called Burn Station under these burning lights, and we get mad out there. You should try. And I feel a bit uncomfortable to be there. So, you know, it's supposed to be like an horizontal meeting. But anyway, you can, at some point you can come over here and dance with us. I have no statistics. I'm sorry. We work with cultural phenomena. We don't know if it's subculture, if it's culture, if it's... We'll see. I just want to let you know that Platonic is not only, as Janko said, we are not only working on this project called Burn Station, but that somehow it's kind of the more visible. So I want to let you know we are a group of cultural producers. You can understand it as you like. We're also radio makers. Sometimes we do like curating for getting some money. And we also software developers who, from the mix of their, let's say, computer technical knowledge, and also, I have said to say, social interest, we've set up a number of independent community media projects, or rather like net radios, open servers, knowledge bank experiences. And it's important to say that our main interest is to bring down the internet culture down to the street and back and forth. And it's really about seeing a clear bridge between public domain and public space, I mean, which are two spaces that are completely, I mean, the use of these spaces are every day reduced. You know, so it's something we have to have in mind. It's not only about music, but you see music is really useful to kind of spread a more global idea on free culture and politics. If you're not agree, just let me know. So that's... you don't see anything. I'm sorry. Can we fix that somehow?
Is there anybody here that could
Anyway, it's okay. I had a nice video, but some people might have seen it like hacked on the... previous panel. Anyway, so let's do it differently. Well, to resume, culture, technology, and social issues. Well, we basically work on two polarized concepts, which are the one you work with every day on a daily basis, which are community and tools. So we rather create tools for community. We sometimes give services to grassroots communities. It might be streaming, might be organized like a media or radical entertainment strategy, all these kind of things you can think about. Okay, so it's a shame that I don't have my PowerPoint or whatever it's called here, because it would be really easier. But it's okay. Do it yourself. I want to make a couple of points. Burn Station is a free copying mobile station, which is based on copyleft or Creative Commons registered or music. It works basically, it's a, let's say, a community-based project again, and it works on with three different communities. The first one, of course, is the net labels and net radio producers, which are, let's say, the content providers. The second community would be the community of the software developers, because Burn Station works out, it's based on free software that we've been making specially for the project. So it's completely downloadable, and you can install your own Burn Station. You can even change the contents and put your own contents in it. So it has a whole life outside of the Burn Station, let's say, music context. It's important to say. And then the third community would be let's say, the local burn stations we've been setting up or that people set up all around the world, lots of them in South America because of a special focus on working with South American collectives. And I want to say a couple of things on net labels that maybe that haven't been said, and they're quite basic, and Janko knows about that because he wrote this book, Mix, Burn, Rip, and Burn, in different orders. So, something really important, I think that net labels not only have enjoyed the peer-to-peer systems, I mean, I've enjoyed the benefits of the peer-to-peer systems, but they have also sketched their whole musical blueprint in the endless pit of file-sharing networks. So they have embraced these networks' ethical principle, which is sharing is good, in a casual and natural way. It's important to say, maybe we have time after all to talk about a couple of examples. There's also this label called Sosic Records, which might be one of the most interesting, not because of the music it produces, but because it tries to change the structure of a normal label, which is maybe kind of a thing that you have to put on the top list of a to-do thing by the net label, that they should also think about changing the whole structure of the music and not maybe reproducing, you know, the classical record label thing, having artists, albums, compilations. Why don't we think about another structure for music? And this is also really linked to something maybe we'll have time to speak about. It's more like the experimental music scene. I don't know if you're familiar with a tool which is called PD, which is kind of a free version of Max. And this, there's a whole scene also linked to the demo scene from the early 90s, which are trying to change also the idea of itself of a track. They're trying more. There's a big change there. It's not only about distributing music or the final content. It's about distributing patch that allows you to make music. It's completely different. And maybe, hopefully, there's something we can talk about. I want to also say it's important to say that many of the net labels that have arisen on the internet, they have a long tradition of a CDL label, independent label. And of course, there's a new generation which are more like a newcomers. But we have to maintain this link with other subcultural phenomena. And I think it's really important to have it in mind. We also think about tape culture, tape mailing, you know, mailing art. These are strategies that have been used. And the digital world is just like allowing us make it in a different way. The main point of Burn Station and our main interest is how do we connect this online smooth world of net labels and net production. 1 minute, you're so dirty minded. Don't put me under pressure. Can someone tell me what I was saying? tape culture, it's really important. CDR. And one of the main focuses of the Burn Session, it's a shame you don't see it there. You have to understand it's a whole Burn Session, it's a software, but it's a social gathering of people around the act of sharing, and that we use music as a strategy, just to speak about like maybe some deepest ideas like copyleft, patents on biological life, etc. But Burn Session is really an effective project because we see that just offering free music, it's a good start to have a real conversation. But it's not the end. I'd like at some point that someone can show the pictures anyway. Just to finish. Burn Session looks at also other cultural phenomena that have happened, it's clear, but I'm particularly thinking of the dub. I don't know if you're familiar with reggae and dub phenomenon, which is a subcultural, or not subcultural, it's pretty mainstream right now. But it started up in Kingston, in Jamaica, in a situation where it's pretty comparable to the situation right now with the monopoly of big record companies and so on. You have to know that in Kingston, in the 50s, end of 50s, mainly it was dominated by, like now, American industry. You know, so many people played like soul music or did cover of American hits and so on. And then these clever guys came over and say, well, music should be connected somehow to the audience, and we have to invent sound systems. So that's what the connection is with the Burn Station. Sound systems is really about making a bridge between the studio, and the public, and the street. And that's what somehow Burn Station is also about. And I'd like you to test this thing. I don't have so much time. Can you give you details? It's important. It's free software, so help yourself to your own Burn Station. If you have some troubles, you may have some troubles. Well, find yourself.
Well, thank you very much, and it's really unfortunate that we couldn't watch the presentation, but I think what we are going to do is upload the presentation maybe on the WAS website, or at least link to it on the WAS weblog, so you can all go there in a few hours and check it out yourself, and then also go to the platonic.net website where you have the video, I think.
I try to upload on the WAS blog the video, and it's okay. Somewhere, if you find on, you know, Burn Station, you might find it anyway.
Okay, great. So after we heard all these different approaches, basically, or a couple of different approaches, I have a couple of questions for the participants here, and then I would very quickly like to open the panel, the microphones to the audience, so because I can imagine that you have a lot of questions too. But first of all, I have one question for Olivier, because I think an interesting thing about Burn Station is that you really have an international approach, that you went to a lot of countries in Central and Southern America to show it off. You showed it in Mexico, you showed it in Bolivia, I think, in Brazil. And Brazil is one of the big topics, of course, here. And so I would be interested in how the whole model of the Burn Station got perceived there. And maybe you can compare it to the reaction that you get here when you show it at a conference like this.
Well, first, it's not meant to be shown in such events. Of course, it's nice to present events because we also have, of course, need some financial support from cultural institutions. You have to know this is a project that started from scratch, and it has been living from other projects we've been doing around it. So somehow to maintain the whole sustainability of the whole system, we need to do this kind of presentation, which is nice because we might need people, and the software needs some improvement. So if there's anybody interested in, like, you can test it in the software development, you can help. But of course, Burn Station is made, you know, for the real space to meet real people, you know, people that might not have even internet on the place, or you know, and because we had you have to know that Burn Station is also really connected to our radio practices, which have we have network of radios, lots of them from South America, so it naturally came up of a already existing community. That's why basically it's working. And of course, we have our own Burn Station, which is the one you're going to see here. But you just need a computer somehow. And it's important to say, as I said, it's not meant to be, you know, you can, for example, there's one in Bogota, which is used in schools to make like a radio program exchange between schools. So it's not like about net labels. It's about, you know, having a whole new use of it. And it's just there because it's needed somehow. And but the I think it's pretty well combined. So the net label scene and the darkest activity that we might be more implicated with, because the net label scene works on its own. That is something maybe for I would say for the here for the net labels. There's still no connection between the real space and it's not a cultural phenomenon yet. You know, you look at punk, dub. You know, there's this idea of connecting music to the streets, and there's also like, you know, it got police brutality and all these phenomenons. See, till now, I don't think that any label, net label representative member has been beaten up by the police. Maybe when it gets like at this point, we have like a new cultural phenomenon.
Maybe there's a chance to get this started in Berlin. I heard the Berlin police is very, whatever. While we're at the topic, I thought there was an interesting discussion a couple of days ago on Moritz's website, actually, on flow.net, because before the conference started here, there was originally the idea to maybe have a software distribution, especially for net label producers, kind of a net label out of the box based on open source software. And the idea was discussed a little bit on flow.net, and some of your co-writers, co-authors actually said, well, net labels don't really need more tools, net labels need more context to the real world. I would be interested in what your opinion on that is. Is there a lack of reality in the NetLabel scene is there a lack of? Is it too much of a niche?
So, yes, I, as I stated in my presentation, a lot of net labels, they just make music out of the bedroom, and then they push it into the internet, and that's it. And that's the lazy part, and a real label does more. And I don't think that the whole music industry is evil, because they have a right of existence, because a lot of musicians are some sort of artistic. They just want to do music, and they need somebody who is pushing out the music and who writes a text about it, who does the cover, and who organizes some sort of concerts or a tour or something like that. So I think a label has to do some sort of these activities, and a lot of net labels don't, because they just want to push out the music, make more music. And for me, it's often very sad, because a lot of good music is just left on some dead internet bodies lying there, and nobody's getting notice of it. And I think, as I stated, if you want to be a musician who is living from his productions and of doing music, you have to do concerts. And so the net labels have to to support the artist and to give him some space where he can earn money. And this is doing music on the street, in the clubs, or somewhere else, and to entertain people. Because a musician, a good musician, is also be able to entertain the people.
You want to jump in, right?
So, I certainly wouldn't say that the music industry has to be evil, simply that they act evil. The question is, can it be possible to run a record label and a distributor and a concert promoter and not be evil and not extort other people and not do exploitative contracts and to not sue grandmothers for peer-to-peer? Is it possible to do this and make a living? I think so.
Maybe that's a good point for Sebastian to jump in a little bit and tell us a little more about what you were talking about when I cut you off so rudely, which is the upcoming business model, so to say, of Thinner, and your ideas of how to translate open access into open access to music and net label to a valuable business.
Well, there are different possibilities how to how a net label can be able to generate a profit. I mean, just at these very days, so to say, you see, if you watch or if you are interested in the net label scene, more and more net labels are switching to paid downloads. Just this week is Synergy Networks from Berlin, and last week, I think, or 2 weeks ago, it was Archipel from Montreal. These are two good net labels where you can see that there is a lot of work involved. And if you involve a lot of work and there is no compensation given, you get sooner or earlier motivation problem how to keep it all up. So these labels have decided that they are going to charge for the downloads and to enter the market with all these other, I say, regular labels who are distributing vinyl or CDs and are selling their music on Beatport. It is a controversial question how, if this is the right approach, if this is the ultimate solution to say goodbye to all your roots, to say goodbye to the idealism that was involved when you were finding this net label, and what are the other possibilities that a net label can think of? Well, first of all, maybe the most important thing is a net label have a very interesting target group, which are like the young people, creative people who are like the opinion leaders, so to say, in the marketing language. And there are many corporations who are interested in reaching these people. So you can consider a selling banner space, like ads. This is definitely, NetLabel is a strong brand. I cannot imagine right now any NetLabel that has, that is selling banner space. So there is a big potential. The other thing is, which has been pointed out before, selling licenses movies or like sell ringtones. There's also a big market. I just don't see a Netlabel having a distribution of, on its own, or like an own division which is only takes care of selling licenses. There's also like there are possibilities. Then of course there's also the diversification if you sell physical records, like two of the most recognized Netlabels, which are Epson Lab, which has been named many times, and the Berlin Netlabel Techstone. They sell physical records, and with a Netlabel they have the best advertising medium. So the records sell well, and they finally are able to generate profit. So why are not more Netlabels selling records like or like doing regular record releases? A fourth point, and then I'm going to stop with this, is fashion. There's also like similar with these, what I started when talking about banners and ads for fashion labels. Working with a Netlabel is an interesting brand because there is a sort of idealism and this sort of politics involved. And for fashion labels, it can be interesting to transport these messages on their own products. So where are the cooperations between Netlabels and fashion brands? So this is what I've been thinking about. Also a big market, or they should at least have their own Netlabel wear collection. What I can say is that us at Thinner, we have had for 2 years, we're selling shirts. We now sold out completely, and we sold a lot of t-shirts, and I can't remember except two or three Netlabels who are selling shirts too. So this is a point where there is profit making available, and I would like to see, or I hope to see, that more and more Netlabels get their mind up and start doing a business out of their thing, because there are so many projects where you can see there's a lot of work involved, and it just deserves that these Netlabels get some sort of compensation.
Two points. The Creative Commons has two initiatives going on to help commercial licensing and profiting from Creative Commons licensing. The first one is called commercialcommons.org, and there you will find a standardized music licensing agreement that you can use. So if you're a Creative Commons artist, you can license your music with a good contract without using a lawyer. That's a very good thing. And the other thing that they have is a new metadata format, both in XML, in ID3 as well, which says for further rights, go to this URL, the idea being to closely tie non-commercial use following through to commercial use and profits.
Olivier, you earlier said that you're missing a little bit from Netlabels, that they question the model of a traditional label, or the model of I'm the artist, you're the audience, this is the product, and you're not allowed to change it. And in fact, many Netlabels use sort of restrictive Creative Commons licenses that don't allow sampling of the works without any prior consent. Do you think that this idea of becoming more of a business, becoming more professional, is going to further restrict the space into what's something that looks very closely like a traditional music industry?
Well, I guess so, yes. Yeah, for sure. Well, but I think Thinner had also a nice example, and that's also what I'm trying to talk about, linking it to some previous subcultural phenomenon. At some point, you had the idea of doing like a, not the best of, but like a vinyl compilation maybe of the best Thinner things. And I think that's something we're still in a kind of a transitory time where people are ready to buy, you know, you can still combine peer-to-peer downloads and also collectionism somehow. You understand the word collectionism? So anybody would be ready to buy a Thinner vinyl just because it's an object and it's you can touch the object. There's many, I mean, t-shirts, he said it. I'll do also some promotion.
You can give me the right to show you pictures, but
Okay,
you can buy the t-shirt. Can't beat the t-shirt.
You can buy the t-shirt and help the project to go on. Yeah, somehow.
Sure.
Well, it's a graphical version. But yeah, actually, I'm not spending my whole day thinking of a good strategy for because I have enough with our own cultural projects to find kind of a sustainability. But I would say something maybe not politically correct about Creative Commons and all this hype about like being cool, having a free license on your website. I'm sorry, I really realize that I'm agree that Creative Commons is a great toolbox that allows people to have some kind of more control and conscious about like how much freedom they want to apply to their own work. But at some point, it's more about like, you know, it comes from still the idea of protecting your copyright. We have to think about that. And there's also this boom about free licensing. It works. It should work. It has to work. But it's just a small part of the whole channel of production. It's just, we just started with the end process. We still need, at least for larger cultural projects, but I think also for music, and it's also connected to PD community, for example. We need to share mediums, bandwidth. That's what we need. You know, production, administration, we can share. Lawyers, we need lawyers. We need to share lawyers. It's not only about like having your work ready and distributed there. I mean, Creative Commons is working a lot, and that's also, I met Lawrence Lessing and I asked him, what about creating a read community? And they're working these last 2 years on the, you know, because it can also be interpreted somehow in a kind of a tool of control, all this, not far away from this DRM for me. So you know who's using your music. You can, you know, of course it can be a nice relationship. You can start with him, but you can also sue him at some point and so on, you know. So I would rather apply like a GPL license to the music.
You want to jump in?
Next to doing concerts, I think a very good thing is, like they said, doing fashion, doing something around the music, because music is somehow virtual. It starts in your head. You get it into your brain by your ears. And very important is to work together with graphic people who do some visual things. And I worked, I did a net label my own with friends for 1.5 years. And we did also, we focused very much doing very good graphics for the music we put to the people. And this is very, very important. And a lot of net labels forget this thing, because how do you find an MP3 on the flea market, for example? I don't know the word in English.
Flea market.
Pardon?
Flea market?
On the free market, MP3s are not sexy at all. So you have to do a little of packaging. You have to give something for the fans, posters or fancy stuff. And this is also a thing. Lots of net labels, there's a lack of this trying to do something around the music and to connect it to the music. And this is some sort of making music, making graphics, making fashion to combine it. I think this would be a good way to earn some good money.
Maybe this is also a good point to just open the microphone to the public. I bet you have tons of questions, and I hope I can see you. It's really very bright up here. We have a microphone there in the front. Maybe you can just come to the microphone and ask your question, tell us what you think about
it. My name is Marcus Brinkmann. I'm a free software programmer, so I'm looking at this from the free software perspective. And you have said some things that while doing this, for example, for the big impact on bringing the music to a big audience, and you have made the connection to the free software movement. But at the same time, you've said that you want to sort of find out how to commercialize this and how to control how the music is used in a commercial sense. From my perspective, this is a conflicting goal, right? Because by curbing commercial use, you're actually preventing to have a big impact. For free software, it has been essential that it could be freely used, even in a commercial sense. So what I try to understand, not knowing the music industry very well, what do you believe is the difference between software and music that sort of leads you to try to find different ways in licensing, for example? Yeah, that's my question.
Who wants to take this? Anybody?
May I?
Sure.
So one really obvious difference between software and music is that there aren't usually successive improvements to a piece of music like there is with open source software, where you get on the CVS tree, you improve it, the software has a very long life and many derivatives. With music, maybe one remix, maybe two, that's all. So that's one obvious difference, that the benefits to the musician for open sourcing their music are not as clear-cut as they are for software. The other is, I would say for Magnatune, I tried to absolutely borrow open source business models. Two come to mind. One is MySQL, trying to have a GPL, which a number of companies don't like, and so they have a side license for them. So they are able to fund their GPL development by offering a license that many companies will not use, which is very much a commercial, non-commercial split. That's one possibility.
Do we have other questions? Who's the next one? I can't really see. You have to...
Hi, I'm Ronaldo Lemos from iCamos, from Brazil as well. Just would like to make a question about the composer. We've been doing lots of research in Brazil, and we have been figuring out that the composer, especially when the composer is not the interpreter itself in the of the music, is having problem to get compensated and to fit in the this open business model as a whole. So I just would like comments about how do you deal with the position of the composer, especially when not the interpreter.
This doesn't really apply for net labels as far as it goes, because net labels, most, I would say 98% of them are dealing with electronic music, where the actual composer is also the interpreter, and there's like no platform where it only deals with like remixes or you know, like some these sort of organizations. So still, this whole net label idea is a very for music genres, it goes very restricted to electronic. So maybe if one day ever there will be a jazz net label or rock and roll or something, then this will become definitely an issue, I think. So maybe you can ask the same question again in 6 years or something.
Maybe it is an issue right now already, and that's why there are no jazz and rock and roll labels.
I think there are just a few jazz or rock net labels, because recording rock music is quite difficult. You need a lot of microphones, you need a real studio, and then a lot of rock artists, they have to pay for the recording studio. So then the next question is, why should I give my music now away for free? And they try to make CDs, for example, thousands CDs. And the next thing they do is doing furniture with using these CDs, because nobody buys them. And I think this is the problem with a rock and roll thing, with a jazz thing. They are not so connected, as Sebastian stated, to electronic things. They don't know how to make MP3s, maybe, because they know how to really play a good guitar riff or something, and that's still the problem. But I think the more and more rock labels are coming up, and they realize that the internet is a good thing for promotion.
Maybe one quick question, just like a factoid for John here. You said that 30% of your music already is classical, or 30% of music that
so gets 42% of our sales is classical music. And I mean, for me, the issue of the composer and the performer is the same. In order to release the music both for commercial licensing and for Creative Commons use, I need to have all the rights holders sign my agreement. And I can tell you that because we license commercially so much, that, for example, composers do extremely well with us. And I mean, if your music plays, for example, in a shopping mall, and we're licensed to a whole string of shopping malls in the UK, they don't pay PRS in our case. We do a license, it's like GEMA. And they earn much more money. They get 50% of the money collected from the license, rather than who knows if PRS or GEMA will ever get around to paying you.
Okay, next question.
My name is Paul Keller from Creative Commons in the Netherlands, and actually it picks up right where you stopped. We are facing a lot of problems, or we get approached by a lot of musicians who want to use the Creative Commons licenses but who can't because they're also members of GEMA, PRS, the collecting societies. Do you have, how does that problem present itself to you, like to the net labels? And on the other hand, do you have any, what's your answer, what's your policies, what would be your wish list? Basically, it's a question to all of you, but I guess maybe you can start.
I have to deal with this a lot because there's money flowing into Magnatune, so the collecting societies are especially interested in me. We actually went to battle, not over court, but face-to-face with the lawyers at PRS in the UK over this issue because we had license to a very large chain and they felt they should still get money, and they fought us. They lost, which is very interesting. What comes down to is there are two cases where music can be Creative Commons licensed today that I know of. One is if you are not with a collecting society, then there's no problem. Everyone knows that. But the European collecting societies are very good at propaganda, and frankly, they pay a lot more than the US collecting societies for similar airplay. That's my own observation. The other advantage, though, the other way to do this, is in the United States, the government sued ASCAP and BMI and required them to do non-exclusive licenses. And what this means is a couple things. One is if you are American, you can do Creative Commons just fine. But there's another aspect for Europeans that's interesting, and this was the battle with PRS. If a European musician is, let's say, with GEMA and signs with us, we're broadcasting out of America, and it's the American law that applies. So even though in Germany they're not allowed to do that, because the music is downloaded and broadcast out of America, that jurisdiction applies, and that is what we won against PRS.
One quick interruption here. There's going to be another workshop on Friday that's dealing with free content licensing issues. I think this is going to be one of the issues that's going to be debated there. So people are going to go into more detail on that workshop. But maybe one quick question just to Sebastian, because I heard that this is coming up for you guys as well, or that you deal with this as well, that you're trying to revise your policy on that.
Collecting society question is a big issue for many net labels it goes, but also especially for us. It is very unfortunate that the German GEMA is very, very restrictive for the use of external licenses it goes. If an artist signs up with them, then his whole repertoire is part of the GEMA, and so he's not allowed to release under Creative Commons license. So as we are a German net label, we apply under GEMA law, so to say, for these artists that goes that are part of the GEMA. And just to finish this, we have decided to remove all of the material from our website that is by any collecting society artist, no matter if GEMA or SOCAN or SWISA or whatever, for the reason that the law is just too much of an X to us. So we have not been approached by any society, but we want to prevent this by taking the first step, so to say, by removing this content by ourselves before we are getting asked to do it or pay a lot of licenses. So what we did was to remove this, but there are still many other net labels who are not doing this. I don't know why they are not taking care of it. It's their point, their issue. I think for as long as this GEMA law is so restrictive, it's very difficult to work with artists who are like coming from the vinyl or CD market who are interested in maybe using a Netlabel as a distribution tool, just because the Netlabel would have to pay the royalties. And so if, for example, us, we now say we can't anymore work together with any collecting society artist unless he signs a contract which transfers the liability to his side.
Can Olivier, can you comment or explain the lawsuit, if you know, in Spain between CC and the nightclub?
I think
it's a really long story, and that's a good video, I think, on internet. Basically, like the equivalent of a gamer there, this guy, Sociedad General de los Hoteles, Escritores, is acting with the same kind of strategies in GEMA. It's like somehow it did some good work with the government and having some new laws applied and acts like a ministry somehow. So there's no life outside of GEMA and collecting societies, but there is. And there's a way, there's some manuals, there's some lawyers working on doing manuals also to how to get out of the GEMA, or in this case, guy, which takes a long time, but if you really want, you can get out of the whole system.
Maybe we should just...
There is a lawsuit in Spain that happened, I guess, about 6 months ago. Sorry, you weren't finished. Then please.
We also have a lot of questions left, so maybe we should just jump into the question.
Have these detectives, the collecting society have these detectives, and it happens that they went to this, it's not a nightclub, it's a social culture, or it's a social center. And they had this music, and that this detective came, and it was not only music, and of course filmed, they have like all these detective strategies, so they got sued, and of course, by chance, the material that the detective recorded was pretty bad, you couldn't hear anything. And because the lawyer is kind of he's called Javier de la Cueva, you can find some information about him. He's really pretty active, and he made, a kind of good strategy, and he said that this club was only playing Creative Commons music and copyleft music, so they shouldn't be sued by any collecting society. And they won. And the idea, the strategy was also, somehow, it's a change that it happened. There was something that we were expecting, that at some point there would be some conflict between the free licensing just to test if it really works. And somehow now you can be sued, but still refer to copyleft because it has been done once. So there's a chance that it's getting like massive.
It works in Spain. Next question.
Hello, my name is André Spiegel. I'm from Berlin. I have a question for John Buckman. You said that you make most of the money for your company from commercial licensing, that is, from licensing for advertising, for movies, and for other uses, whereas the way you distribute music to individual people is more or less like voluntary payment. So people can just grab your stuff or they can pay for it. Does that imply that voluntary payment actually does not work? And you have to resort to other forms of revenue to actually make money from the music. And then if you look at this commercial licensing stuff, for example, when you license music for films, they in turn are proprietary films, proprietary information. So are you just riding on the coattails of the ancient economic model when you license your music for films, for example?
Those are both really good questions. The first thing I should qualify is there's a concept called a gift economy, which Magnatune is not. Many net labels do use a gift economy, and the idea is the music is available for downloading for free, for example, from the Internet Archive, and then you can choose to send money if you like. You don't get anything for sending money. And with Magnatune, there is a consumer side, which is all the albums, everything as MP3 streams, and that's the main consumer interface. And if you want to buy it, you can buy it as a CD or as a WAV FLAC download, and that costs $8. If you are an open source-minded person, you can click License, Creative Commons, and then you have a free download. But there's a differentiation between consumers who are not part of the commons, who merely want to consume. I would like them to pay. People who are part of the commons, the license download, same thing for podcasters. So that's one thing I do there that seems to work very well. I should say when I started the business, I thought more like you that consumer sales was dead. And between iTunes and peer-to-peer, it was not going to be possible. Much to my surprise, consumer sales of downloads have kept pace with licensing and is still about 50% of the business. But more importantly, consumer sales is what gets me all the press. If I didn't have all the consumer side, I wouldn't get Target Saikung or USA Today or all these other things writing about me. So that's really important. On your second question, my original idea with Magnatune was with this We Are Not Evil thing. If you've ever met sound engineers and video editors in big companies like, say, Disney or other things, you know, they're often cool people, and they're working in the big companies because they need to make a living. And the idea was simply that those people, say a video editor making an ad, could license music from someone that they philosophically feel very comfortable with, and it spends their boss's money to help create this revolution that maybe bypasses them. That didn't happen. I thought it would happen, but it turns out the big companies, the guy with the tattoos has to ask his boss, and his boss doesn't like Magnatune. What does happen, which totally took me by surprise, was all these music or uses that cannot license. For example, someone who makes weddings, wedding videos. There's no way to license music for a wedding video. Also, I did not know how much independent film was out there and how hard it is for those people to license music. So what has happened is Magnatune is the primary source of music for a number of smaller genres of business that are completely excluded from digital licensing, and we have very little penetration with a few exceptions. One that's really cool is a new car by Peugeot comes with an MP3 player. And when you drive it away, it has 30 gigs worth of music that's Creative Commons on the car. And that's great. And it's in the commercials and on the website. But mostly, we don't touch that space.
I'm Alek Tarkovsky from Creative Commons Poland. I'd like to start with a simple question for John. Can you give us a sense what percent of people pays on your site?
I know exactly. It's 1 in 42 people who go to the site, buy an album. That's one of the highest ratios on the internet.
So about 2.5%.
That's correct.
Because I think this is an interesting issue. When I go to the States, right, and especially when I went first time as an adult and I went to a bar, I encountered this thing that in the States you tip the bar person, right? And when you ask the people, why is this like this? Because you get a bit shocked, because first you don't know you have to tip. They really explain, everyone says you tip, because the wages of the waitresses or the bar people are really low, and you should do it. And everyone does it, right? And of course, some don't. You sometimes get angry at them, so you don't. Or sometimes they complain and tell you. But it somehow works, and I'm just wondering, this is more of a comment, but maybe you have an idea how we can reach this state. I think there should be an option of having the music free, but it would be good to build this norm, you know? Like maybe say exactly this, you know, tip us 10% of what you would pay for an album. It's just, I mean, it's not nice to tip musicians. It's a bad word, but I'm curious how to do it. And the other thought I have, because it's easy to click and buy, but also it's sometimes easy to walk by and see a really nice CD and buy it. And you can't really go anywhere and buy net label CDs on the streets. And this ties to what you say, Olivia, that I think that you need to tie the streets also with maybe the business model. Like here, it would be nice to have a stand with music from all possible net labels. And I immediately think that's probably a problem that a small one person or two person label can't really deal with distribution. So would it make any sense, for instance, to have a net label cooperative that would, you know, give you one person dealing with that? And would that make any sense? Just wondering.
I was just going to jump in there really quick and maybe ask Sebastian, you have a PayPal button too on your website.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, you do. And how is the experience with that? Why are we talking about the?
In the beginning, it was nice, but I think after 7 or 8 months, the label donations went to zero. But from what I know from artists releasing, the one or other still receives donations which are not bad, which are good donations in terms of money, but in the end, it's not a model that is worth talking about it, because nobody, or like if we compare how many visitors we have on the website every month and how much money they leave, then you see that it's not much of an option to concentrate on this PayPal thing. So donations, from my experience, don't work with NetLabels.
And I think a difference with the waitress thing is that in the internet you don't see somebody who's working, and it's more anonymous. And I think that's maybe also the problem, because why people don't pay. And also you have this little step with PayPal in between. This is still a step to stop. Oh, I have no account, so I move by, and next time you move by again.
Plus one thing, one observation. In the US, actually, Germans are known as the people who give the worst tips. So maybe it's really hard for a German net label. Should we just go on with the next? Oh, okay.
Yes. Somehow we already pay these 10% that you speak about on, you know, how do you call the canon? Is that right? Is 10% you pay on each blank CD you buy on hardware, software? And this is getting to collecting societies. It should also get to independent producers, but somehow it's not. But there is. The system already exists, and it's part of the whole vicious system. And respecting to doing a kind of turnout parent session into a business model, the only viable thing would be, you know, try to have parent session set up in bars and, you know, clubs to avoid them, like a jukebox a bit. To avoid, or like doing like with a stream, to avoid and, you know, avoid them to pay to the collecting societies. And then you will, you know, but it's building, it's pretty hard with calculating. It's pretty hard, you know, we don't know exactly how at the end the actual producer gets back from that, because, you know, if anyone is specialized in gift economies, also apply to business model, you're welcome to come around. And I, just one detail, you can come and have CDs burnt on the burn station site. We're setting it up. So there's some net labeled music there. It's there.
And I think a problem was also the industry, the music industry in the last years. They don't, if I buy music, they don't like me very much, because they do copy controlled CDs, and they force me they forced me to do things with my, I couldn't do what I wanted to do with the CD. And I think a lot of people thought, okay, the industry is against us, they haunt us, they chase us, we are bad, and so on. And so there, a lot of the respect for the music got lost, I think. That's also a problem.
Okay, next question.
Hello, I'm Claudio Prado from the Ministry of Culture of Brazil, and I just would like to bridge the issue that you are discussing here to what's going to happen tomorrow in the open business discussion that Ronaldo will talk a lot about, some experiences in Brazil that are quite amazing in respect to how people are making money. And also in the Saturday panel, we will discuss this from the other point of view, from one other point of view as well, the pontos of cultura, that are people of the 19th century that are receiving kits and putting and uploading, understand the uploading before they understand downloading. They've never downloaded anything, they're uploading before they understand downloading, and this is, and they are finding out ways to organize their own new ways of making money that do not come from discussions, do not come from, they don't know anything about copyright, never heard of it. They never heard of anything like that. And they start having ideas once they have access to cyberspace. And we will be talking about that. And I would be very personally very interested to bridge your experiences to ours there in Brazil. We could sit down and talk about it. My panel is going to be the last one, so maybe in between we could talk and discuss about these, how to bridge these things. Thank you very much.
Do we have more questions?
I'm Joachim Holzer. I'm a documentary filmmaker and one of the license takers of John and Magnatune. Hello. And I just admire Magnatune very much. And I take a notice that about a year ago, you wanted to spread distribution channels. And if I took it correctly, you wanted to also be part somehow of the Apple, or considered to be part of the Apple iTunes Store. So we could maybe all consider that iTunes Store of Apple is a very successful kind of thing for distribution. But if I understood you all correctly, the block that might be in the way for using the iTunes Store or other commercial online music distribution sites is that they don't take Creative Commons stuff. So can you be part of the iTunes Store while not dealing with collecting societies?
We are on iTunes, and the two things on that. One is I didn't see anything in the legal agreement that I signed with iTunes that said any problem. With iTunes, they simply need a non-exclusive license to do what they do, and they don't care what else you do. That was my own experience. The other thing is there are some questions as to whether anti-DRM labels should have anything to do with a store like iTunes. And my general feeling there is if you want to get recruits, you need to talk to people outside of your circle, to people who don't understand your issues. And so if you go to iTunes and you see music, there's Magnatune, Magnatune, Magnatune. And if you just Google it, you see We Are Not Evil. So that's a way for us to get people out of iTunes and getting some higher quality, better music and paying the artists more that way.
Next question.
Pete Jenner again. I'm trying not to come up again. I just think that the collection society bashing, which has been going on, is extremely bad news. I think it's very short-sighted and very foolish. As John pointed out, the rates in Europe for authors are much higher than the rates in America. And the reason is that in America, there's a very high, you know, obsession with competition. And there's something to be said for the creative community having some sort of monopoly rights. Now, I accept, I'm not here to just say up with Gamer. I accept that there are huge problems with the collection societies. In historically, they have been incredibly obscurist, very much like the record companies. But I think the writing is on the wall, and I think probably now is the time when we should try and work with them to try and develop a system which works for all sides. I mean, maybe I'm just being a very naive person, but I do think that that is a possibility, that we can now start talking to each other instead of bashing each other. In other words, it would be a good idea if gamers stopped trying to sue you and started trying to work out how to do things. Because the fact that you're having to limit your content to artists who will not get paid from radio play is very damaging, and it's going to limit your business. And I think for all of, in all respects, we have to try and broaden out and get the old structures to somehow or another realize that they need to work with the new structures. And I have to say, as someone who's very old and works a lot with all these industry associations, the difference between now and this time last year is considerable, if not enormous. And so I do say, let's give them another chance. Let's try and do a deal with SGAI. Let's try and do a deal with Gamer. And if they won't, then say, well, we'll go on screwing with you. But why don't you do a deal with us? Because otherwise, you are going to get screwed by the record companies. So, hey, we can all get together and find some ways which are sensible. Even the record companies are frightened of getting screwed by the internet. So there's a hope for us all, I think.
Before Olivier says something, I got some...
I just want to say something, because you called that collecting society bashing, and what you are arguing, we are talking, for Creative Commons at least, is talking to collecting societies since 1.5 years, and they are extremely, extremely inflexible. It is not that we are bashing them, we've talking to them, and I completely, like when I heard what John said earlier, that actually European collecting societies pay better than American ones. Actually, I had the same thought that you had, but still, like, they refuse to answer even the most basic arguments at the moment. So it's not bashing them. We would love to talk with them. We would love to enter in some kind of, like, like discussion on the same level, but they're acting like they're sitting on this throne they have built themselves, and they are not open to these kind of discussions at the moment.
So now, Olivier.
No, I just want to confirm what you just said. In Spain, there has been some discussion since more than 2 years, and it doesn't get anywhere. You know, and the argument of the collecting society is that Creative Commons doesn't work because it doesn't provide you services, which just kind of delete the whole tradition of being your own distributor, your own producer, and manage your own rights. And there's also a big issue on creating an alternative collecting collecting society, and it has been completely blocked by the government and so on. So there's some tries. I mean, somehow.
I would also like to support you that the GEMA has a right. A lot of musicians who are doing film music, it's very important and so on. And there are also collecting societies. For example, I have a friend in Switzerland, and the Suissa, it's the collecting society over there. They're quite open-minded. And I think the difficulties depend sometimes on the country, sometimes on the people. And I would also like to defend ourselves. It's not a bashing. It's just sometimes arguing, why is it moving so slowly?
Okay. Do we have time for one more question?
I can't see what you're holding up. Yes. So, hi, my name is Simon, and I'm actually partly running a net label too, and actually I'm running one of those really few net labels that do have rock music, and in a wider sense maybe even jazz music. But
you should share the URL with us while you're at it.
Okay. I just have some really quick comments on this discussion, but just maybe a really quick comment on the thing on. I wanted to say GEMA thing and everything. So we are like really independent and really small, and we don't even think about making any money. That's just because we love music. And I can approve the thing that most of the Creative Commons people or of us are not really anti GEMA or something like that. And I don't even think that they are do what they do because they don't like us or anything. I'm pretty sure they just a lot of people. I mean, you are here and you are informing yourself, and that's really cool. We had to cancel some releases because it was not manageable to get along with GEMA musicians. And actually, I called a couple of times there, just to ask them what's their opinion or what we maybe could do. That was because before the podcasting licenses came out and everything. And I had not one time someone on the phone who had any clue what I was talking about. So the people there. Had no clue about Creative Commons license or something. So I think it's not meant bad. They're just, most of the people, they have no clue. And maybe I'm not into all those big schemes and everything, but anything I'm asking for is, so we are not making any money. In the discussion before, you said there's money flow. And of course, the artists deserve to get their part of the money. We are not making any money. And the thing is, when we are we would release a musician a record of a musician that that is licensed at the GEMA, we would have to pay so the people can download for free. And that's a big problem. All I would be asking for is, where's the problem to make a real big database? You have a huge database, I'm pretty sure, where you can say, I'm a musician and I have a special release, and I would like to license this release under Creative Commons license. And maybe another release where I think, okay, there is some money in it to you know, put under a commercial license. That's at some other points, but that's going
to I think we're running out of time here. Is there? Okay, 30 seconds.
Okay, I was a member of the GEMA for 15 years.
I think actually.
And
I'm sorry.
I had to quit my membership because I wanted to use free licenses. I called the GEMA. I actually got someone on the phone who knows what I was talking about, and he said, "No, you can't use free licenses. You'll have to quit your membership. There is a European directive that says the monopolistic ties between the collecting companies have to be get rid of, or whatever." And but that's going to take 2 or 3 years, so they're not going to do anything for the next 2 or 3 years. And if I want to use free licenses, I'll just have to go, which I did, thanks to the GEMA. Huh?
Was it easy to get out of the
GEMA? I think the details maybe
it
you
was
can,
easier.
You yeah, can yeah. share privately, because we're running out of time, unfortunately. And because I know you still have a lot of questions for these people individually, and you might not have a chance to meet everybody afterwards, I would like to ask everybody to maybe share an email address with us that people can use to contact you. Maybe start with Sebastian.
Email address is sebastian@thinner.cc.
Thinner is thinner.cc.
Right.
Find me on info. How do you call that thing? A robot.
Et.
We need some Spanish-speaking language and other languages. Anyway, platonic with a Q at the end. It's important. .net. But anyway, I'll be there around. So I prefer to meet. Let's build the bridge between P2P and face-to-face right now. We have the chance.
My email is just simple. It's mo@phlow.de. Flow.de.
So I'm john@magnatune.com, or just Google John Magnatune.
Okay, myself, I'm Janko@lowpass.cc. And I thank everybody for coming, and I especially thank our panel who brought great presentations. We couldn't watch all of them, unfortunately. But as I said, we're going to try to put it up on the Wizards of Oz weblog and link to it at least. And thank you very much.